Next case for argument is McGregor v. Rutford. Mr. Longman.
Good morning. May it please the court, my name is Scott Longman. Together with Mark Rust, I represent the plaintiff appellant, Dr. Margaret McGregor, in this matter. Your Honor, you said it best in the course of the Austin v. AANS case, in that what we need is more policing of expert witnesses, not less. And this case does that without opening...
But what really bothers me here that I hadn't noticed in the Austin case is this notion that you have a professional association, which is, you know, prestigious and everyone wants to belong to it and so on, which is trying to set norms for expert witnesses. That strikes me as extremely questionable.
Well, Your Honor, it's the same.
What if this association said, no member of this association can testify against another physician?
That, of course, would be a significantly different set of circumstances.
That would be extremely improper.
It would indeed, Your Honor.
Extremely improper.
What?
Now, this notion that this these norms set out in your... I'm not questioning the norms, but the notion that these norms in this, in your, you know, in the laws of the association give rise to enforceable legal rights seems to me extremely questionable, right?
Well, Your Honor, I would
you
like...
You have your choice. Join the association. It has all sorts of professional advantages. And you join the association, prudence would suggest you will not testify. You testify against another physician, another, you know, brain another surgeon, you'll be sued. If your client, person who testified for loses his or her malpractice case.
To address the court's point that this is some sort of control by the professional association, Your Honor, in Austin called these rules sensible. And indeed, Your Honor,
I'm not questioning the rules. I'm questioning the rules conjoined with legal rights to enforce them against someone who has the temerity to testify.
It really comes down, in the first instance here, Judge, simply to a breach of contract. We see from the three cases that
it's hardly simply, because you have a very tortured argument in order to create a contract right, not against the association, but against another doctor. I mean, ordinarily we think if you breach the rules of your association, you can be expelled, and, you know, that's the remedy, not that you can be sued by another member for a breach of the association's bylaws.
Well, as we look at the O'Hara case, Your Honor, and the Picoud case, and the Golden Seed case, each of those establishes a matter of black-letter Illinois law that a member of a voluntary association does indeed have standing to sue another member of the voluntary association in the event there is a breach of the rules of that voluntary association.
That's way too broadly phrased, because, you know, if there's some agreement among all the members of the association that they'll resolve matters by means of an alternative dispute resolution mechanism, for example, that's one kind of thing. I look at your rules, and frankly, they're so mushy that I can't imagine a case where one neurosurgeon testifies against another in which it would not be followed up with a lawsuit about the testimony. Neurosurgical expert witness is supposed to be an impartial educator, supposed to give different viewpoints. Well, you forgot one of the viewpoints. Identify personal opinions that vary significantly. How significantly? These do not look to me like the kind of legally enforceable norm that something like an agreement to go to ADR would be if, say, there's some kind of, I'm not even sure what it would be, but, you know, that one of the cases is an ADR case. That's a very different, that's a crisp, that's an understandable legal obligation. You either go to court or you go to an arbitrator. This does not look at all like that to me, and I don't see any of the Illinois cases as coming close to the rule that you're arguing for.
Well, Your Honor, I'd like to attempt to persuade you that it really is an easier issue than that vis-a-vis these rules. First of all, the impartial educator one isn't at issue here.
But it could be in the next case. In the next case, somebody says, oh, you didn't sound like an impartial educator. You know, you testified as an expert witness against me in a malpractice case, and I won. I showed that I was not, in fact, guilty of malpractice, and that's because you weren't impartial.
Well, Your Honor, I think that appears as preamble. The focus here is the action in terms of the actual testimony, and that does have an objective standard.
What do you mean as preamble? I mean, I'm saying you, one of the things you're griping about is the failure to identify as personal opinions things that vary significantly from generally accepted neurosurgical practice. That is a completely unclear standard, and the reason Illinois has one of the strongest testimonial privileges in the country is because we want people to come to court and testify, and the court has systems available, including cross-examination, including ultimately, you know, I know that you disparage the notion of perjury, but let's just stick with cross-examination. If somebody's views are wacky, you can bring that out on cross-examination. There are all sorts of things, and to sue somebody because they got up in court and testified is something that Illinois frowns on.
I'd like to address both the perjury and the cross-examination issues, Your Honor. It is not me disparaging perjury, but rather it's the Illinois Supreme Court.
That's why I put it to one side. I'm saying cross-examination alone, if somebody is the only neurosurgeon ever to receive a license who thinks, you know, that stray voltage from electrical wires, you know, can cause neurosurgical disease, you know, or require a procedure, then you can show that that's a wacky view.
That is true, Your Honor. Let me touch on cross-exam and then return to the standards for the standard of care for a moment. As far as cross-exam, that is also the Illinois Supreme Court saying that it has the potential to have very little effect.
But there's never been an Illinois case that has said there is no testimonial privilege for expert testimony. Never.
That is correct, and the reason for that, Judge.
And so why do we make up Illinois law?
The reason that the cases thus far, Your Honor, have not granted an exception to the testimonial privilege come down to really three issues of policy. One is the fear of chilling testimony in the first instance, people willing to get up on the stand.
Which seems to me a very serious concern here, given the mushy nature of these rules.
I'll address that right now, Your Honor. The standard of care is something that an expert under existing Illinois law, the Sullivan case says this, is something that they have to know. It should be extraordinarily easy for someone who rises to the level of an expert in Illinois to know what the standard of care is. And therefore,
but you're talking about the standard of care as if it's an abstraction, or as if it's, you know, was the light red or the light green. But as you well know, in medical expert testimony, it's a very factually dependent situation. You know, what was wrong with that particular patient? What were the range of outcomes? Where are you? What are the resources available to you? There are a whole range of things. It's not something that is just a binary choice. Yes, you got the standard of care right, or no, you didn't.
That is true to the extent, Your Honor, that It can be broken down into a whole series of steps. Here the step was, well, where were the retractors placed along the line of a muscle? And then how did you document that? Well, ultimately there may be a dozen factors that go into determining a standard of care. Nevertheless, you can still ultimately work through all of those.
And if you get it wrong, you'll be sued.
Well, not at all, Judge, and here's why. First of all, anyone who's competent to know the standard of care will also know what the minority views are. That's, as you look at the Sullivan case, you should know that. But let's assume they don't. The way our litigation system is, of course, structured is you have the opportunity to face an opposing expert who will provide a report, and you have an opportunity to give deposition testimony, which will be queried on all these things. That effectively functions as a safe harbor here.
Ridiculous, right? You have a trial. Then after you have the trial and the judgment, you have the cases against the witnesses. You have a whole bunch of cases. Why just sue this witness?
Your Honor,
was this case brought originally in federal court or removed?
This one was brought originally in federal court.
Well, look, we've said in past cases, if you want a novel ruling of state law, you should sue in state court. Now, if you get removed into federal court, well, fine. We have to...
I think what trial counsel's concern in having originally brought it in federal court was, Your Honor, was that there was already diversity to citizenship and they probably would have faced removal. But there are two other issues there as well, Judge. So often these experts have national practices. This expert had 16 states with 68 cases going. And, of course, we see that in any number of other contexts. So the likelihood of ending up in federal court is relatively high. And then the other issue was, of course, that this court already had familiarity with these very rules through the course of the Austin case. I see that we've entered the time for rebuttal if the court does not have...
Okay, that's fine, Mr. Longman. Sure.
Thank you.
Mr. Rolfe?
Thank you. May it please the court and counsel. There's no dispute here that this case arose solely out of the testimony of my client, Dr. Rutberg. There's no dispute that Illinois, as the court has recognized already this morning, it has a strong, very strong, absolute testimonial privilege. And there's no dispute that the plaintiff here, Dr. McGregor, is essentially asking this court, sitting in diversity, to carve out what would be a significant exception to that immunity. So I think
does the record show after Dr. Rutberg was expelled from AANS what happened to his consulting practice?
It does not, Your Honor.
Okay.
I think one of the key points and the starting point or what even makes this more determinative is that if you look at the plaintiff's complaint, they originally pled this as a breach of contract action and count two defamation where they describe that, if you look at the complaint parenthetically underneath, as an abuse of a qualified privilege. So immediately they have misunderstood what the Illinois law is in terms of the testimonial privilege. It's an absolute privilege. In the Illinois appellate court in the Jurgensen case, actually granted a defendant sanctions when they brought a cause of action based on court testimony, ignoring the absolute privilege.
Let me ask you this. Some of the cases explore the limits of this idea that the privilege is really absolute. And the kind of case that I'm thinking about might be one where there's a contract between A and B to keep certain trade secrets confidential. And B gets up on the stand and blabs about them, reveals the trade secrets to the world. Is it your position that A cannot sue B for that revelation?
I think under current Illinois law that would be the case. The cases that speak to that are, I believe, the California cases. Their absolute immunity is statutory, and it refers to in tort. So I think that's the distinction, and I don't think that's a recognized exception currently under the Illinois cases I've seen. The Illinois cases have consistently upheld the absolute privilege. It's described it as impenetrable.
Because that's a troublesome result. If that's the case, then B has no incentive at all to take care with the trade secrets. If there were some risk, then B might move for a protective order or in some other fashion get judicial approval of what's fundamentally a breach of contract, in my hypothetical.
And I think those are other safeguards that are present.
But why would B bother to do it? If Illinois is going to protect him anyway, it's a freebie. He gets to just get up there in the stand and talk.
The privilege in Illinois is very strong. Mm-hmm. They've not gone that direction. This certainly is not the case or the relief they're requesting here. If that determines in another case to become an exception if it gets before the court.
Well, I thought you were suggesting a case like that, the testimony would be given under seal, right?
But that is certainly one alternative to prevent it from being published. It can be.
Let me ask you: does the record show anywhere what happened with this perforated esophagus? I mean, what?
The record before this court does not show that. I was not involved in the underlying medical malpractice case, which was the plaintiff received summary judgment and got out of that case. So the answer here is I don't know, Your Honor, and it would not be in the record that the court has before it.
Most of the testimonial privilege cases from the Illinois courts for the last 20 or 25 years have been from the intermediate appellate court. From what I can tell, the Illinois Supreme Court hasn't had much, if anything, to say about this issue, at least in that space of time. I suppose one option would be to certify the question. Would you have a position on that?
Well, my position would be that if you seek leave to go to the Illinois Supreme Court, we've had numerous appellate court decisions. There's not a split among the districts. So I think it's consistent that the Illinois Supreme Court were looking for an opportunity to revisit the issue, or it looked like the appellate courts were splitting or coming up with some other ideas, then they might take and tackle that issue. I think the appellate courts have consistently applied the prior Illinois Supreme Court cases. I think, as the court here today has recognized, even if you go back to the Sears case and then the Trower case, recognizing the issue of perjury or cross-examination, the Trower case was 4 years after the Sears case, and they continued to say that's an effective deterrent for this. So
we should construe the Illinois Supreme Court's relative silence on this as its view that the issue is fairly settled law?
I believe that's correct, Your Honor. That's our position, is that it is very settled law. If I might just, I guess, touch on the waiver issue, I don't know that it needs... The waiver issue, I think, going back again to the plaintiff's complaint, pretend is in their alternative relief asking to go back to explore that issue. I think it's important, again, to see what the plaintiff pled in the complaint, because we've got two members of the AANS, Dr. Rutberg and Dr. McGregor, and the allegations of their conduct as alleged are inconsistent with this idea that there wasn't absolute privilege that was being waived. The allegations against my client are that he acted intentionally. That's inconsistent with someone who understands he has an absolute immunity to have waived it. But more importantly, as I said before, the plaintiff pled in her complaint that it was a qualified privilege. Well, if you're going to waive something, it's all the cases, and their brief sets them out, it's an intentional relinquishment of a known right. Well, Dr. McGregor herself, apparently, by joining AANS, assumes that she was waiving a qualified privilege, not an absolute privilege. So to the extent they say we need to explore whether members of AANS think that they are, by joining this organization, somehow voluntarily waiving an absolute privilege, the very facts that she pled in the complaint are inconsistent with that. So I think, also, therefore, we would request that their alternative relief be denied. The absolute privilege reigns, and I would ask this court not to step in this diversity situation to go down a path to create any exception to the absolute privilege, and certainly one that, as we've heard here today from Justice Wood, seems to be a mushy situation and will lead to more litigation rather than less.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Rolfe. Mr. Longman, how much time does he have? 4 minutes? One of the things I find puzzling here, what are the damages that Dr. McGregor suffered?
That has not been briefed here, Your Honor, but I can answer broadly that Illinois recognizes through defamation law that where you impugn someone's ability in their trade or employment, that you get defamation per se, which leads to both general and specific damages.
I mean, I don't understand. She was vindicated in the lawsuit, so...
Well, notwithstanding being vindicated, Your Honor, there are questions out there in terms of what business has she lost as a consequence from people having heard about the lawsuit, how
Please,
much did it cost
what,
her
what,
to...
What reason did... Look, most... In orthopedic surgery, this kind of... obstetrics. So there's some fields in which a large percentage of perfectly competent, reputable doctors are sued.
Certainly true, Your Honor. Nevertheless, Illinois law provides that if you have been impugned in your trade, then you do have recourse through defamation law.
The implications are breathtaking. You're saying every time a doctor is sued, even if she is exonerated, she has a potential claim for general damages in a defamation suit.
Well,
that makes it a very attractive, you know,
if the case is baseless, Your Honor,
to sue the witnesses.
If the case is baseless and it violates the rules,
the plaintiff,
you could lead
right?
there. The second component of that, Your Honor, of course, would simply be what it cost her to fight that case.
The plaintiff would be just as attractive as suing the expert.
Well, certainly malicious prosecution would be...
The plaintiff who, you know, originally accused Dr. McGregor.
Well, that's certainly another alternative, Your Honor, however...
Well, that's what I find a little alarming, right? Sue the expert and the plaintiff and...
Only within the very limited confines of these rules, Your Honor. If I may, I'd like to address the question about the qualified privilege pleading. We don't argue that here. Illinois does, in fact, put the label absolute on the privilege, but I'd like to be clear that absolute, of course, does not mean unwaivable. We see in the Zdeb case from Illinois that you can, in fact, waive the testimonial privilege. The next thing I'd like to raise is in response to Judge Wood's query about certification. We would certainly welcome certification here for the same reason that we say that Erie applies here, which is that we think the Illinois Supreme Court would come out exactly the same way. I'd be pleased if the court would like to walk through the factors related to certification. They raise the question as to waiver in the first instance and whether the privilege is waivable.
What's certification?
Certification to the state court, Your Honor.
You want certification to the state court?
We believe, Your Honor, that the Illinois Supreme Court...
The state court to decide the case. You sue in state court.
Well, Your Honor, appellate counsel is different from trial counsel, and
well,
as we already indicated...
Look, that's a difference that has no bearing on what we do.
Understood, Judge. We still believe this is an entirely appropriate forum for the reasons that we stated in the earlier part of the argument. However,
look, I mean, you want to turn one suit into multiple suits, and you want to turn one judicial proceeding in the federal court into two, one in the federal court, one in the state court. I mean, you know, have some mercy on the judiciary.
Your Honor, we'd be perfectly happy to have this court decide it, but if the court chose to certify...
Suits, but each suit then forks into two proceedings. So you have the suit in federal court, and then you have the certification proceeding in state court.
Your Honor, we continue to believe that the way the rules are structured, it would not in practice ultimately lead to that. All of the cases that talk about the testimonial privilege...
Well, sure, because no neurosurgeon would ever testify again.
Your Honor, I see that I am out of time.
Okay. Thank you very much to both counsel.